This is In Focus, featuring interviews with our local newsmakers, information on community programs and politics, and the story on local current events. In Focus on Lake 88.
Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perot. Very pleased to have with us today two guests from the health unit. Kim McCann is with us. Kim, welcome.
Thanks very much.
And with us is Dr. Paula Stewart, as she is frequently on Wednesdays to talk about a few things before we get to Kim. Dr. Stewart, welcome back to Lake 88.
Yeah, good to be here again.
Okay, I don't know if you've made this public or what, but how much longer do you have until, you know, is this, do we know this yet or?
So they're doing the recruitment right now. They closed on Monday yesterday. So they'll be doing interviews and so on. So I'm planning to be here over the summer and hoping that by the end of the summer, everything will be in place. We'll see.
I remember when the announcement was made that you were going to be retiring in the summer. And I thought to myself, oh, that's so far away. And then I looked at the calendar and like, no, it's like a couple of weeks away until the summer's here. So been wondering, but it's good that you're going to be with us for a while. When you do get to go and retire, it's so well deserved. So we're not going to hang on to you any longer than, well, than you let us.
Okay,
now,
thanks.
We wanted to open today by talking about something that's been in the news across the country and in all different spots around the world as well. Monkeypox. Okay. Mm. It is, we hear about it quite a bit, and I guess the first question that we have for you is, what is monkeypox and what do we need to know in Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark?
Yeah, excellent question. So monkeypox is, its home is in Central Africa, the Congo sort of area, and first recognized sort of in the 1970s. And it was called monkeypox because they thought it came from monkeys, but it doesn't always. But the usual way that people get it is by exposure to animals that have it, exposure to the secretions from animals, or if they are killing and preparing the animal in contact with their fluids, that kind of thing. And then occasionally there have been little exports of it. Like there was one in the States maybe 15 or 20 years ago where there were rats from Gambia, large rats from Gambia that were imported into the States, and they were housed with prairie dogs, and the rats gave the monkeypox to the prairie dogs. The prairie dogs that were then were adopted by people, and the prairie dogs gave it to people. So there have been odd things like that, but not like the situation we have right now. There are two different variants. The variant that's circulating now is the milder one, which is a really, really good thing. And so it looks like it probably was some people who did travel to Africa and became infected there and then brought it back into their country. And you know what happens? It's a virus. When viruses start to circulate among people, then you just wonder if the virus hasn't changed a little bit, that it's so that it's either that when people are exposed to it, it's more likely to cause infection, or it's more transmissible. And I think there'll be researchers studying that forever. The reality is that it tends to be a mild infection. It's a rash infection, starts very much like chickenpox with a prodrome. So fever, not feeling well, muscle aches, that kind of thing. And then the rash starts. And the rash starts with little red spots in the mouth, actually. And then from there, it goes to spreads to the rest of the body. The pictures we have of this is mainly children who get it in this Central Africa, is that they have the lesions all over the bodies. We're not seeing that here. We're more seeing smaller isolated versions of it. And so that it goes from a little red area. And so you have scattered red areas on your body, and then they turn into little papules, so little bumps, and then they turn into little vesicles that are clear, and then they fill with fluid, and then they burst. It sounds like chickenpox, right? The difference is that with this one, there's actual induration. So it actually goes down into the skin, whereas the chickenpox just sits on the top. And they're very different. They're bigger. The top of the vesicle is tougher and so on. And so once you go through that, then once the lesion bursts and then it heals, the skin is healed, then that's the end of it. And so that whole process takes somewhere around 2 to 4 weeks. And when someone has the infection then, because you can have it in your nose and throat, obviously it starts in the mouth, then you wear a mask. So you're isolated home, you wear a mask, You make sure you cover your lesions so no one in the home is exposed to them. And you wait for the 2 to 4 weeks until everything settles down. So that's what the virus infection is all about. Then clearly, the prevention is directly tied to how it's transmitted, which is through close contact with the lesions. So skin-to-skin contact, really close contact with someone who's coughing or sneezing. It's a very heavy virus. So when it, remember, this is like COVID too, right? It's different than COVID. But when the virus leaves the nose and the throat, then it's a heavy virus, so it drops quickly to the ground. So that you really need that that close contact. So that's the main way to prevent it is when you're interacting with people. If someone has the prodrome, they should be staying home. If they have any lesions, they should be staying home and they should be contacting their healthcare provider. The other thing, ask a question, then I'll add in about vaccine.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to say, is it here? Is it in Lanark, Leeds and Grendel
definitely there have been some recognized in Montreal and some in Toronto. So far we don't have any, but we are, as usual, prepared. So the prepared part is actually we sent out this has all just happened as of last Friday. Like I got the notice at 10 o'clock on Friday, last Friday, like the Friday that just
a few days ago.
Yeah, so we're actually preparing some social media that would have gone out today, and we're preparing information that will go up on the website for people. The WHO, if you do monkeypox WHO, they have a fantastic sort of 5-page summary all about it if people want to know before. So the other thing in terms of prevention, so for people who have it, they can prevent it from being spread by others by early recognition, wearing the mask when they're inside the house, having their lesions covered. And there's also a vaccine. So the smallpox vaccine, because monkeypox is part of the same family as smallpox, the smallpox vaccine also will work on monkeypox. And there's a new variant of a new type of vaccine that Health Canada actually approved in 2020. And we do have some supply of that in Canada. And so the plan is, and if you hear the infectious disease specialists, they talk about ring fencing someone who has the monkeypox, so that as soon as you diagnose it, then you, and this will be a public health job. Our usual contact tracing job will be to connect with the person, not meet by phone virtually, and identify who their potential contacts were, believe it or not, in the previous 21 days, because the incubation period is quite long. It's usually sort of a week to two, but it could be as long as 21 days. And so we'll identify those people. And then those people would be the ones that you could consider a vaccine for, because the incubation period is so long. If you give the vaccine, Kim, it's just like with rabies vaccine. If you give the vaccine, your body has a chance to develop the antibody response before the virus actually starts being active in the body, which is pretty cool. So that's really the overall plan is that people know about signs and symptoms, they respond quickly. And then for the context that public health will work on, that we'll look at what we can be doing around vaccine. And the contacts, they need to be wearing a mask when they're out and about because it starts in the mouth and the nose, and they need to be watching for symptoms. So we know what to do.
Yeah. And it sounds like a lot of this is in the wake of COVID, like we're seeing the notifications come out and so on. But I have heard that people are saying, now don't worry, this isn't COVID, as you said earlier. Yeah. You know, it isn't COVID.
World's different.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, it's not something you want to get, but it is plain and simple, not COVID. We're not on the verge of another global pandemic with monkeypox.
No, it's because you need such close contact. And you can, so it's from the very close contact with sneezing and coughing is the lesions. That's the big thing, because all those vesicles are full of the virus. That's the easiest way to do it. Not easy, but anyways. The critical thing about it is it's called the class 4 pathogen, which means that the only testing that can be done for it, so during the nasopharyngeal swab or the lesions, is actually in a hospital that has class 4, class A precautions in place. So it has to be to transfer it from the hospital to the lab. It has to go in a special package. It has to be sent through a courier that has had special training. So that's really the rate limiting factor. So what we're recommending is that if people do have symptoms, that they contact their healthcare provider, explain it. And then if the healthcare provider thinks that they should be tested, then they go to the eMERGE department, and then the eMERGE will do all the appropriate things and the hospital will send it off. It actually sounds so much like how we quickly adapted. Initially, it was only the public health agency Winnipeg lab that was able to do the testing. Now, locally in Public Health Ontario, they're able to do a quick test, which still has to be confirmed. But it's the rapidity with which we respond to these things is just phenomenal.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, Kim, you keep nodding your head here, and we're on Zoom, so I can see we can see Kim, and obviously it's something that you have great interest in too, Kim. So I'll just ask you to quickly unmute and maybe just weigh in on the topic that we're talking about right now, monkeypox, and if there's anything that you want to add to what Dr. Stewart just said.
No, I guess I was nodding my head because I was just thinking, yes, yes, yes. That's all of that. That's right information. Good, good, good. I don't really want to, I don't have anything to add.
Okay. It's, you're part of the health unit, of course. So, and I'm sure that Dr. Stewart, as she says, you know, you're ready. Maybe I can just ask you, Kim, as someone who is part of the health unit, now that we've had this monkeypox, come in here, have you noticed, how quickly the health unit was able to mobilize and to be prepared because of what has happened with COVID? I guess that could be one of the positive effects, the quick response time.
Yeah. And the nice thing is the Ministry of Health is coming out with information, and Public Health Agency of Ontario is coming out with information very, very quickly. And like Paula said, we're prepared, and if we need to, we'll respond.
And Paula, that must make you feel so good to hear that.
Oh, yeah. So we remember we had those Tuesday morning COVID calls at 8 o'clock. So Becky sends a notice out on Friday, and Tuesday we had like 30 or 40 people on the call where we shared this information. And you know, the connections that were so well established and so effectively are there, so that you can do that. You can quickly call a meeting and people will be there. So it's pretty cool. Yeah. So I think that this is not something to worry about. This is something to know about. And I think there's been a lot of attention to the fact that it's now circulating in the group where men who have sex with men. That simply was fortuitous that someone came back and was part of that community. So it's nothing specific to that community. That being said, this is Pride Week coming up. And so I think that if people are participating in Pride Week, to really think about who you're having contact with, like be sensible about it, as we're always about prevention.
Yeah, and that goes with any event too. Like it's the same thing. You've been saying that. Yeah, and I think you made a really good point. This is about knowledge. This isn't about raising the alarm. This isn't about, you know, getting people to worry excessively or anything like that. This is what the result of post-COVID, not quite, but almost post-COVID world that we're living in right now, is that health information gets out there pretty darn quickly.
Yeah, pretty darn fast. Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of which, let's talk about COVID. We have a couple of questions. I appreciate that on monkeypox. And I know a lot of our listeners were very curious about it. We have two questions for you today, and they both have to do with vaccine shot number 4. Let's get to number 1 right away. Good afternoon. I am a 58-year-old and have COPD and other related problems, and waiting for my turn to receive my shot number 4 of the vaccine for COVID. When might that be?
Very unlikely. The decision was made to do the 60 plus age group because that's where we're seeing the greatest hospitalizations and the greatest risk of death. So that everyone's who's had their first two and then the third one, that's considered the basic immunization for COVID now. Remember, we started with 1 and 2, but the basic one is the 2, 8 weeks apart, and then the other one sort of 3 to 5 months later. That's the basic series now. And then the 4th was added in for the people who would be most at risk of having serious conditions. So there are no plans that I know from the province to be extending that 4th dose. It has been extended to people who are immune compromised. And for people in long-term care retirement homes, we've actually added a fifth dose. But for the general population, that'll be it for now. The big excitement is waiting for the children's.
Yeah, for sure. Now, he says he has COPD. Does that put him into that group? Or?
You're not really immune compromised with COPD.
Okay.
Like if you have, need to be on specific medication or had a transplant or be on cancer chemotherapy or something like that.
Okay. Question number two. My wife and I are 69 and 73 years of age, are very active and in good health. Previous COVID-19 vaccines in order are Pfizer, Moderna, and Moderna. We're eligible for our second booster. Which vaccine would you recommend for our second booster? Not to put it lightly, but it sounds like they're recommending a wine for dinner tonight. They're asking you to recommend.
I love that.
Exactly.
Boy, any one of them is really good. The difference between them is Moderna has a little bit more in it, a little bit more antigen than the Pfizer, and may have a little bit of a longer impact. They're both good though, and we offer both at our clinic. So yes, you've got a nice potpourri there, there's a little bit of evidence that if you have the different Pfizer and Moderna, it actually might give you a little bit of benefit. So you've done really well. You could have either one right now.
Excellent. I'm Pfizer, Moderna myself, and feeling pretty good. So
yeah.
And I find the Moderna has a nice light finish to it, you know, with little undertones of oak and cherry. That's where we are now, I guess.
Eh? Yeah. The other thing I wanted to add, there wasn't a question about this, but just to add to let people know is that, so the Omicron has all sorts of little siblings. Well, or children or something anyways. And the 1.1 was the dominant one through that big surge in January. Now BA2, and it actually has BA2 in there. They're all up to 1.2 after it as well. It's replaced the B1.1. And it means that if you have had an infection with Omicron 1.1 between sort of now and January, then if you're exposed to BA2, you could get COVID again. So remember we talked about within 90 days, it's usually that it's like if you have a sniffle within those 90 days, it's probably not COVID. It could be now because the cousin of the 1.1 is now circulating quite well. So just for people to pay attention to that, if you're getting symptoms, feeling horrible, then stay home when sick, the usual things, wait at least the 5 days, and the next five wear a mask and keep away from people who could get really sick, keep the distance. And we're also finding that the rapid antigen test, a negative, doesn't necessarily mean it's negative. So really pay attention to the symptoms and in terms of staying home. That's my little tidbit.
Okay. Now, before I let you go, and just quickly, because I know we have to get to Kim. You mentioned kids and the vaccines. This is what we're waiting on. What's the latest insider information, if you will, that you can tell us?
So the insider information is that Moderna has submitted to Health Canada. They've got a 10 microgram dose. So Pfizer went all the way down to 3 microgram dose. Moderna has got a 10 microgram dose that seems pretty good after two vaccines. Pfizer has had to add a third one. So it looks pretty good. It's about 40% for the little bit higher for the little ones, the 6 months to two, and then the 2 to 5 or 2 to 6, and which is pretty much, and the good thing is it was tested with Omicron. So, and that's pretty much what we're getting with Pfizer and Moderna for adults for Omicron as well. So we're hoping that we might know about approval by the end of June. The challenge will be when Moderna is able to produce enough vaccine for us to be able to give it to people. So we're still sort of planning for the end of the summer, but we have many parents who've been asking us about that. So really pleased that we're going to be able to offer that to them soon. And the vaccine will be through our clinics and primary care. Not sure about pharmacy, maybe. We'll see.
Okay. But either way, you're ready to roll.
We are ready to roll. Indeed. it was your question was great to Kim, because it just hit me how quickly we moved in, even within the health unit. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is very cool. And it's one of those benefits, if you will, of what we've been through. You know, people are learning a lot more about health, and health information is getting out there quickly. And pretty soon, I think people will hear something like we're hearing with monkeypox right now, and they won't get alarmists and say, oh, that's just the media blowing it up, or they'll understand that this is just what you need to know as far as health wise. So, for sure.
Good stuff.
Dr. Stewart, always a pleasure. I look forward to our next conversation as always. And you've been a great opening act for Kim here today.
Sounds good. Over to Kim.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. We'll bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi.
All right. Hi, Kim. So
hi.
Thanks so much for being here.
No problem.
Sorry to put you on the spot a little bit earlier there, but really some good information that you and Paul have sort of teamed up to provide there as far as mm-hmm. getting ready goes. And mm-hmm. Your talk with us today has a lot to do with getting ready and mm-hmm. being prepared for things. We had a great conversation the other day and we've done a couple of stories. There's a story on the web as well at Lanark Leads Today about spring cleanup tips. And we want to go over some of those again here today before we get into some other heat related things a little bit in just a few minutes here. But let's start with those spring cleanup tips, Kim, if you would. And I guess people are looking at cleaning up in the spring, but we've also just had this massive storm. So there's a lot more cleanup than usual that's going on.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, you may have fallen trees or shrubs in your yard and, you know, may require some cleanup that way. So one thing to be really conscious of is ticks. We are seeing lots of ticks right now, just like we do every spring and summer. So the ticks are definitely out and they tend to live in, you know, under the leaf litter or under debris. So, you know, as you are cleaning up your fallen trees, as you're raking your yard, just really, when you come inside, do the tick check and don't forget to take some precautions, wearing an insect repellent that contains DEET or eicaridin, or even just covering up your skin would help prevent you from getting a tick on you in the first place. Mm-hmm. And then also if you have a fallen shed, think about the wild animals that may be in there. You know, if it's been down for a little while, you might find baby raccoons. The baby raccoons are out and about right now. So you may find a baby raccoon in your shed. You may find some birds or they're dropping. So just be cautious when you're cleaning up that type of debris as well. Check it out first. If you see a little raccoon in there, give it some time, let it get out of there. Also, don't forget about their droppings that they may have left behind. So when you clean those up, make sure you wear a good face mask and some gloves and protect yourself from anything that may be in the feces of the birds or the little raccoons.
Yeah. And if there's raccoons in there or any sort of animal that you know there's evidence of it, make sure they have a clear path to get out.
Yeah, exactly. And give them the space to get out too. Yeah. You know, don't try to save the little raccoon because you don't want to get bitten by those little guys. They are wild animals, although they are cute.
Yes, they are. I'll give you that. Now, when you're cleaning up something like a shed or, you know, maybe a cottage and people have already done that, there are people who are still anxious to get out to their trailers and mm-hmm. cottages and so on. But there's some things that you should be doing in preparation of doing that, right? Like before you get started.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really, you know, with those cottages or campers, like you said, or just when you go in the first time, open up the windows, open up the doors and let the fresh air get in there for about a half an hour and let that stale air get out of your home or cottage or camper, like you said. Again, be prepared for what you might find. You might find some droppings from, you know, either rodents or whatever, be prepared for that. So wear proper protective equipment, a face mask, gloves. It's wise to spray them down with some water before you actually clean them up. We wouldn't recommend that you vacuum them as they are or when they're dry because it can aerosolize the bacteria or virus that may be in the animal feces into the air. So it's best to wet them down and then clean them up with a paper towel and dispose of it that way.
Okay. And also we wanted to, was there anything else that you wanted to touch on the cleaning before we move on to well water?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, make sure that you wash your hands, even though you're wearing gloves. It's really, really important to wash your hands. Some gloves can be porous. So there may be an opportunity that your hands could still be contaminated. So it's important to wash your hands after you do the cleanup.
And if you're like me, after you do a cleanup in a place like that, you just feel like everything's crawling on you. I have to take a full shower and
sure.
Go down to the fire department, get them to spray them down, you know, get them to spray me down with their hoses.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of water, we wanted to talk about well water and septic health as well. Both very important things that you need to be checking on year round. But I mean, now's mm-hmm. as good a time as any.
Yeah, now's a great time to check your well water, especially if you've lost power for a few days. You want to make sure that you do take a water sample after the power comes back on, just to make sure that there has been no contamination that got into the well while during the time that you weren't using it. If you do think your well water is contaminated, until you get that clean water sample result back, we would recommend that you either boil the water for a minute at a rolling boil and use that in your, washing off your fruits and vegetables, or coffee in a percolator, or brushing your teeth. And then, although boiled water isn't the tastiest water, so you might want to get some bottled water for drinking. But all of our health unit offices, and we also have other locations that you can find on our website where you can pick up and drop off a water sample bottle so you can get it tested fairly easily.
Okay. What about septic systems now? There's lots to check on there. In addition to regular maintenance, again, the effects of the power being out can certainly make things a little bit more tricky this time around.
Yeah. And some of our homes, particularly maybe cottages around the lakes, they may be on holding tanks and they may have a holding tank alarm. So you just want to make sure that after the power comes back on, that holding tank alarm is actually functioning so that you don't get an overflow in your holding tank. Or some of our septic systems actually rely on a pump chamber to help pump the sewage from the actual house to the tile bed. So you want to make sure that all the electricity has been properly restored to that pump chamber so it can do its job, so you're not getting a septic overflow as well. So those are a couple of things you want to check on after this power outage that we've just had.
Anything else septic wise you want our listeners to know about?
Yeah, you had brought up, just around general maintenance. It is really important that we treat our septic systems kindly. You want to avoid putting things down the septic system that may actually plug up the bed. So things like fats or oils that we may cook with, household cleaners or solvents, paints, things like that, kitty litter, as well as any paper towel or sanitary products that we may use as people. Coffee grounds will often plug up a septic system as well. And just don't overload it with water all at one time. So for example, in the morning, if you're having your whole family's having a shower, then maybe avoid doing the laundry right first thing in the morning and, put it on later on in the day so that you can spread out the water usage going into the septic system. All of those things will help keep your septic healthy and your leaching bed working.
Let me tell you, those are some very important tips for people who may have moved here in the past little while, and especially mm-hmm. those who have come from the big city and decided that they wanted to live in a smaller town or a rural area and maybe on a septic system for the first time. You can't just, move forward like you were in, downtown Ottawa or Leans or Kanata or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. We can't just use our water so freely. So another thing to avoid is doing your laundry one day a week all at one time. So, if you choose Saturday morning, don't do all of your laundry on a Saturday morning, for example. You want to spread it out over the week so that you're not putting too much water into the leaching bed and oversaturating it, essentially.
My goodness, Kim, I wish I could do laundry just one day a week.
Yeah, me too.
That'd be fantastic. Okay, we wanted to talk to you about something. It's actually, we've just beat this heat right now, but we do know that it is coming back. And like we go over this every year, and it has to be gone over, if you will, because it is very important that people remember that the extreme heat that people feel during heat waves and so on can have so incredible effects on us. So let's talk about the effects of extreme heat. One of the things that we really want to start off with here is humidity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, humidity really adds to heat. Although it may be 20, like today's a perfect example, it's 23 this afternoon, but feels like 27. So humidity really can add to heat, and can, if you're not keeping yourself hydrated, can actually lead to heat illness. So it is very important that during the summer months, we drink lots of water. And we don't recommend guzzling water. So, if you drink a full liter of water between 7 and 8 in the morning, that doesn't do it for the day. You want to take small sips throughout the entire day to help keep yourself well hydrated.
Okay. And when we talk about who are at risk, of course, we always talk about very young and older adults, but talk to us about why.
Yeah, and don't forget about people with chronic diseases too. So they could be people of any age. The very young are susceptible. They're small bodies. They can easily and quickly become dehydrated. And the thing about little ones, they may not necessarily realize, especially babies, they can't communicate well. So they may not realize what's going on. They may not tell you that they're thirsty necessarily. So it's really important to watch for certain cues that they may be becoming dehydrated. So their skin may be really hot. They may be getting flushed. They may act out and have temper tantrums. So all of those things on a really hot day, if you see your child acting that way, then it could be a sign of heat illness setting in. So it's important to get them to a cool place and get some water into them and start hydrating them. The older adults as well, sometimes they have chronic diseases or they're on certain medications that the heat can essentially counteract with and can cause heat illness. So again, it's very important that they stay cool, that you're drinking lots of water. And if you have older members of your family, as part of your family or friends, then it's really important to check in on them during those heat times of or times of high heat so that we know that they're staying healthy.
Absolutely. The thing too, going back to toddlers there is if they're very active too, and you're right, they don't know when to stop. Playing in water is a great thing. Like we gave our 2.5-year-old the hose and just told him to go to town. And boy, my goodness, he got very wet very quickly, but he was having a blast. And obviously it's a way to help keep him safe. So when there is extreme heat, obviously there's some pretty the people will be told what they need to do, and really what you need to do is stay cool.
Yeah, as much as, yeah, like that's one thing. Try to get to a cool spot if you can. And don't forget about some of our public amenities that we have too. We are coming into the end of June, so our local beaches will open, our splash pads will be opening, the local pools will be opening. All of those are great ways to cool down. If we're into a real heat scenario, your local municipality may open a cooling center. Again, don't forget about your family and friends who may not have air conditioning. And it's not just a daytime thing. Heat can also be a nighttime thing too. So maybe invite them over, let them stay with you to help keep them cool and healthy. And then, if you're in a condo or an apartment building, even if you have a small air conditioner, put it in the window, however you have to hook it up. And then, maybe you just cool off one room of the apartment or condo and then sleep in that area, so that you can stay cool.
I did that exact same thing when I was younger too. It was one
Yeah.
room, and it's like, okay, where am I putting this? And
Yeah.
because this room is going to become my favorite room quick, fast, and in a hurry. And that's certainly, what
Yeah.
I did. And it works. It really
Yeah.
does.
Yeah, because sleep is so important, right? And when it's really hot, it's so hard to sleep. And it just, it's kind of a commun an effective, like, or it, it leads to other things, lack of sleep. So.
Yeah, and you talk about sleep. It's very important for your pets to be comfortable as well. So try to keep them in that room or that area. Try to keep them cool as well. And the obvious one, of course, is don't leave them in vehicles.
Yeah, and you mentioned vehicles, like, don't leave babies, don't leave people who may be immobile, don't leave elderly parents in hot cars either, because it's just
Nobody should be.
nobody should be in a hot
Yeah.
vehicle. It's just not a good.
There's not a living thing out there that deserves to be stuck in a car in high heat.
Exactly.
Yeah. It doesn't matter
Yeah.
what you are, if you have four legs or two.
Exactly. Even if you're just running in quickly to the store or whatever, it could be just enough, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Exactly. And especially when you're talking about young kids too, because again, you don't know the level that they're at. Like they
Yeah.
may not be telling you. No, just don't do it. Ugh, gives me
That's
shudders.
right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So if you do come across someone who has heat exhaustion, or you suspect someone may be suffering the ill effects, what do you do?
Well, if they're actually to the point where they're actually starting to pass out, It's really important that you do call 911. Heat exhaustion can range from a mild heat illness into heat stroke. So heat stroke, if you get to that point, is deadly. So you want to make sure you do call 911. You know, again, we've kind of talked about some of the cues to look for. So if you're seeing, you know, if you're getting extremely hot, if you're getting extremely thirsty, if you're starting to have severe headaches or convulsions, all of those could be indicators that you are suffering from heat illness. And it's really, really important to get to a cool place, get some water into you. If it actually progresses, a person could actually lose consciousness. If you're at that point, you know, hopefully somebody's with you, but you would want to call 911. So if you're with another person and they're experiencing that, call 911, because that would be a medical emergency.
If people are looking for more information on anything that we've talked about, I have a feeling that healthunit.org is a good starting point.
Exactly. And we post all of our press releases and all of our public information on our website. And we also publish them in social media too. So yes, please check us out.
And if you want, if you're not tech savvy and so on, and you'd like to call the health unit, you're there to help people too, right? And there's a couple numbers.
Yeah, we always have somebody on our phone lines. So you can call 1-800-660-5853. That's our 1-800 line, or you could give us a call at 613-345-5685.
Kim, is there anything you'd like to leave our listeners with before we let you go?
I'm not sure. You know, just best of luck to all of those who are cleaning up their yards after having, you know, that storm a week ago or so. I'm sure it's a tremendous job and, you know, lots to think about. So I just want you to know that I'm thinking about everyone.
That's very nice of you, Kim. We really appreciate that sentiment, and we appreciate all that you do for the people of Lanark, Leeds, and Grenville in your role in the health unit. And we appreciate you being here on Lake 88 again. We look forward to our next conversation.
Great. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's Kim McCann, Senior Health Inspector with the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit here on this edition of In Focus. I'm Bob Perreault. Thanks so much for listening, and have a wonderful afternoon.
In Focus on Lake 88. To hear today's program online or to listen to any of our previous In Focus interviews, visit our website at lanarkleadstoday.ca.